Now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to know. Here's your host, Congressional Attorney Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Did you know that you're a nation of whiners? A nation of whiners. That's what America is. At least that's what John McCain's top economic advisor called us. He said we're in a mental recession. There's not real economic pain. It's all in our minds. And if we would just get used to it and give more tax cuts to the wealthy and just suffer in silence, we'd be a lot better off. Now, John McCain didn't like that his top economic advisor said in public, surely what he's been saying in private, and said that, well, if he's anything, he's going to be the new ambassador to Belarus. But we'll find out. What do these principles go into effect? And to perhaps, I don't know whether he agrees or disagrees with Phil Graham's assessment, I'm going to introduce Mike Lane. He is the president of Intelligent Strategies. He is frequently a guest on the Inside Scoop. And Mike.
Welcome. Mark, it's a pleasure to be here, Mark. I want to thank you for having me back one more time. I've been a guest of yours on many an occasion, and it's just a real pleasure to have the opportunity to come back and meet with your audience and talk with people who call in.
I want to know whether you agree with Phil Graham that we are a nation of whiners.
Well, you know, certainly the concept of whining is something that those of us who visit wine country on a regular basis would plead guilty to on any moment. But getting more serious about this, no, Phil Graham clearly misstated the case. John McCain quickly disowned the remarks and said that Phil Graham never did and doesn't now speak for the McCain campaign.
Wait, never did? He was the top economics advisor.
He said he didn't speak for him. He didn't say that it was that he didn't, you know, have advice come for him sometimes. But he did say that Phil Graham never spoke for him and doesn't speak for him now. And as you pointed out, then made sort of a side joke that perhaps he'd find him an ambassadorship in Belarus to join the administration once Senator McCain's elected to the presidency.
But, you know, there was an article in the Washington Post saying that Phil Graham was right, written by prominent conservatives. Isn't that what conservatives believe, that we're just in a mental recession? The pain isn't real. After all, if you are making millions, if you are, for example, a CEO of a major corporation, your corporation can be destroyed, the stock market can fall down, but you can still walk away with a golden parachute. For the super rich, they've never been better off, right?
Mark, you know what? We're not in a recession yet. We may indeed still be headed for one, particularly given the problems that continue to plague us in the subprime mortgage industry, but we're not in a recession yet. The economy still, at last measurement, had net positive growth to it. As you know, a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth. And all I need to do is point to the lines over the weekend. Apple came out with their new iPhone, and guess what? Over 1 million copies sold at like $300 a copy. And these are not the millionaires who are lining up to buy this stuff. These are kids and middle-class people who, for some reason, think they need to have the latest thing. We're not in a recession yet.
Mike, I have no doubt that Apple makes a good product. This is not an endorsement for Apple.
1 million copies sold over the weekend.
Terrific. I'm glad to know that there's still innovation in America. But if you look at the economic statistics, what you look at is the average. When they measure the gross domestic product, as you know, they measure the average across all of America. Mm-hmm. They average in the CEOs of Exxon and Mobil, who are making hundreds of millions of dollars, along with the other CEOs making hundreds of millions of dollars as their companies fall into the ground. They're averaging those CEOs of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who are making tons of money while their companies fall apart, along with the real Americans, the average Americans, the Americans that Barack Obama would give a tax cut to, the 95% of Americans that earn under $150,000 a year. And when you average a bunch of poor people and one super rich guy, the average is pretty good. If you and I and Bill Gates were in a room, on average, we'd all be worth more than $1 billion. But that's just on average. And the problem with the Bush economy becoming the McCain economy if he wins is that they don't look out for the average American. They only look out for the super rich.
Well, I'm glad you phrased it that way, Mark, because one of the differences between Republicans and Democrats is Republicans think all Americans are real Americans, not just people who make below a certain economic income level. Now, let's take a look at, you know, where we are in this thing. The economic dislocation is very, very spotty. Yes, if you're an auto worker in Michigan, you're shaking, you're quaking. Things are very bad there. You might even say the auto industry is in a recession. But the auto industry, if it's in a recession, is there for two reasons. Number one, because Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm, when she got elected, the first thing she did was hit the Michigan economy with a whopping tax increase that took money out of the private sector and put it into the public sector, therefore driving the economy into the ground. The second thing is the auto companies, for all of their history, all of their effort, they never learn. You have
didn't they learn?
You have to have a diversified product to offer the American people.
Interesting.
The auto companies are going along fat, dumb, and happy, offering SUVs.
That's right.
And now we don't want SUVs anymore.
The
non-American companies that are coming in, you know, selling the stuff that they had as part of their product line.
Mike, now Republicans hate SUVs. Now, I'm getting a little confused. All
didn't
these flip-flops are making my head swirl.
No hate of SUVs.
Back in the 1970s, you had Jimmy Carter talk about energy conservation, talking about getting our economy off of oil, talk about high, you know, fuel standards for cars, lower, smaller cars. Then came Ronald Reagan, then came the Republicans, and they said, use oil, big SUVs, massive cars, let's take our future and give it to Saudi Arabia, give it to China, go into massive debt. We don't need to worry about oil. We have all the oil we want. Get those SUVs. Arnold Schwarzenegger used to love, you know, driving around his Hummer showing we don't have to fear the oil crisis. And now that there's $4 a gallon going up to $5, now Republicans are suddenly noticing there's an oil crisis. Well, I'm not sure which side you're on, but welcome to the flip-flop of truly caring about the environment. I'm glad to see you're here.
You're going
to
love this, Mark. First of all, let's set the record straight. Ronald Reagan did not invent SUVs, okay?
Now, he sure promoted them. We had tax cuts for SUVs, ownership even, under Ronald Reagan.
He did not invent SUVs. Look. This only proves one thing, that all the democratic regulation of the market that you've been trying for 40 years doesn't work, and the real market mechanism of the free market and the increase in prices is what works to make things happen and change people's behavior. The reason that people are moving away from SUVs and into more energy-efficient cars has nothing to do with Democrat-inspired CAFE standards, fleet efficiency standards. It has nothing to do with Jimmy Carter telling us we all ought to sit there in our sweaters and freeze in the winter. It has nothing to do with any of these other cockamamie-type things that you've tried to do. What it has to do with is the price of fuel has passed $4 a gallon on the open and free market. The market works, Mark. Let's just let it go.
And had we taxed gasoline 20, 30 years ago, as John Anderson, independent candidate in 1980, wanted to do with the 50-cent a gallon tax on gasoline,
what
it was,
$1.
No, then people could have conserved earlier. Then we wouldn't be mortgaging our future to Saudi Arabia. Then we'd be getting the smaller cars sooner. The problem is not that we had this regulation. We didn't have enough regulation. You took away our regulations. Why do we have this massive banking crisis that we're in now? Because under George W. Bush, they stopped regulating the banks, and now they can make terrible loans. And you know what happens when corporations make terrible loans?
They go out of business.
No, they don't.
They do.
Let me tell you something.
They go out of business.
The people that have the houses, they lose their homes. The mid-level managers, they might probably don't lose their jobs. The shareholders lose, but you know who always wins? The CEO. He has a golden parachute. He can take his company, a company like Citibank, all right? The stock has fallen 80%, but you know what? Those managers, they make a ton of money because they are buffeted. They don't have to worry about economics. They can totally ruin their company and nothing happens to them. You Republicans want merit pay for teachers, but you don't want merit pay for CEOs. Why not?
Yes, we do want merit pay for CEOs.
Are you against golden parachutes? Would you regulate them out of existence? Because I would.
If the board of directors, as elected by the shareholders of the corporation, feel that CEO is entitled to a golden parachute, that's the way the mechanism
works.
That's
such a joke. You know, board of directors elected by shareholders. You know how the board of directors are chosen. They're friends of the CEO.
They're elected by the shareholders, Mark. In every case, they're elected by the shareholders.
And how many times are there competitive elections for board of directors? Because I can't recall
if Ralph Nader wants to go run, God bless him, let him go run.
He's not allowed to.
Sure,
you know
he can.
No.
Anybody can be nominated from the floor. That's not a problem.
No, but the corporation has all the money. They use the money of the shareholders to put forward their slate. They add, and the other guy doesn't get the money of the shareholders to do that. It would be like public financing only supporting incumbents. That's what a stockholders meeting
is. I'm going to meet you halfway. I think CEO pay is ridiculous. I think most golden parachutes are ridiculous. And what we need is we need the stockholders to rebel against this. We don't need the government to invade itself into the private marketplace and have yet one more program that doesn't work. Let the marketplace work, Mark.
That's what we're learning.
That's what we're learning with $4 gasoline. Is the marketplace works.
Corporations
don't work. All of your cockamamie regulations don't work. Don't tell me that, you know, taxes are too low, that we'd have a much better economy if taxes were higher, a la John Anderson. Don't tell me that, you know, no, Mark, we don't want a 50-cent tax on gasoline. We want gasoline to
come down. You want the money to go to Saudi Arabia.
Now, I forgot.
That's right.
Your candidate, Senator Obama, did say he had no problem with $4.50 gasoline. He just wished it hadn't gone up as fast as it did. So I understand Democrats really worship at the altar of high gasoline prices. Republicans worship at the altar of the market-based economy. Let supply and demand determine what the cost is.
The problem is the real cost you folks don't want to pay. Right now, Saudi Arabia owns, 10% of the American economy? China owns another 10%. Soon we'll own nothing less. I mean, there'll be nothing left to America. What you folks want, and what George W. Bush wants, what John McCain wants, is big government, big deficits, big debt. You love that debt. But, of course, what it does is it means the next generation has to pay twice as much. What we say is, look, if you're going to pay a lot of this money in gasoline, instead of it going to Saudi Arabia, instead of it going to Iran, instead of it going to Venezuela and Russia and a lot of countries that I'm not too fond of, let it go to our government. That's where the money should go. And they could spend that money to do things like electric cars, for example. If we had required Detroit to do the right thing, to make cars that were both electric and fuel efficient, then we wouldn't be in the crisis
we have
today.
Been requiring Detroit to do things for the last 40 years,
we
and
haven't.
That's why Detroit is in the disastrous situation
we
that
haven't,
it's in
Mike.
Now. Mark, half the price
Ronald Reagan ended the CAFE standards.
The CAFE standards are up to, they're hitting 35 miles a gallon.
And in Europe, they're in 50 and 60. They're much better
And
off
look at
than
how
we
much
are.
Stronger our economy is than Europe's. We're doing much better than Europe
is. I don't
is.
Think we are.
And our auto industry, as bad as it is doing much better than Europe's. It's the Japanese where they don't have that at all because they do it based on the market and where they think they can sell cars. They're the ones that are doing great.
Let me ask you a question. If Japan is based on the market, mm-hmm. explain to me why in Japan you have the CEOs of corporations and they earn about 40 times what the ordinary worker earns, and in America it's 400 times. What is it that Japan knows that we don't know?
Well, they know that there's a market for smaller cars, and that's why they've built more smaller, more fuel-efficient cars. They've had a diverse
product
line.
Are their CEOs better than ours? Because they earn a tenth of what ours earn.
You know what? When you look at the auto industry and you want to talk about the strategic positioning of the different companies and stuff like that, I would say yes. The overall management, and if you want to put that based on the leadership provided by the CEOs of those companies in Japan, it looks like the evidence is they are better.
Tell me this. You want to give shareholders the right to get rid of bad managers if they do and to not pay bad managers if they do.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they don't have that right because there's a race to the
sure
bottom.
They do.
Everyone goes to Delaware, and Delaware lets the managers of corporations eat up and steal all the money. Would you support legislation requiring corporations to actually be beholden to their shareholders, and if they vote them out, they have to leave with no pay, zero pay, zilch. They ruin the corporation. Would you support that law?
Mark, you're trying to regulate something that's going to ruin it all. Shareholders can choose to be shareholders. They can choose what companies they want to invest in. They can choose whether or not it's a company that will let them have more influence or less influence. They can vote for the board of directors. You're going to ruin the system, Mark.
It's 888-488-MARK. Join the debate. We'll be right back after this.
Too many women get hit by their boyfriends and husbands. Too many women are pressured into having unprotected sex. Half of the people in the world living with AIDS are women. It doesn't have to be this way. Together, we can change this reality. Let's strive for a world free of violence.
At Volunteers of America, we don't just give kids a way to stay off the streets. We give them the tools they need to reach their full potential. We don't just help the elderly receive needed care. We help them live life to the fullest. We don't just provide food for homeless individuals and families. We provide job training and placement so they can buy groceries. Volunteers of America, is a national organization that for over 100 years has provided programs and services that allow people to overcome their challenges to become vital members of their community. At Volunteers of America, we don't just help people, we help people help themselves. Find out how you can support the programs that are working in your community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089.
Drivers face all kinds of distractions. Before your wireless phone becomes one of them, stop. Drive safely. Keep your phone in easy reach and dial sensibly. In bad weather or traffic, call later and use a hands-free device. Remember, with wireless, safety is your call.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I used to work as an attorney for the Democrats in Congress, as most of you know, who are regular listeners. My guest, Mike Lane, fairly regular guest, Republican strategist. He and I are arguing about the economy and who would do better to fix it, John McCain or Barack Obama. Now, John McCain's top economic advisor, former Senator Phil Graham of Texas, has been barred from the campaign for saying what I think most Republicans are thinking, that America is a nation of whiners, that those of us that complain about the economy just have sour grapes, that we should look at the super wealthy, respect them, know our place. They are our nobility. And if they ruin corporations, they get paid anyway. Merit pay for teachers, no merit pay for corporations. I support legislation requiring CEOs to be punished when they do a lousy job. I thought that's what capitalism is all about. All those people that made those bad subprime loans, shouldn't they lose their jobs?
I think they should, yes.
Why aren't they?
Because for some reason, well, it's not that they all aren't. I mean, that's my understanding that many of them are.
Only in the middle positions, but the CEOs, none of them are. And if they do lose their jobs, you know how it works. Golden parachute.
You know, I don't know. Countrywide had a layoff of about 15,000 people, didn't they?
Who gets to stay? The CEO, the board of directors, because they all know each other. They're friends. They're not going to fire each other. That's how capitalism works in America.
Right. Well, you know what, Mark? It's up to shareholders then to decide whether or not they want to invest in those companies. And clearly at this point, I don't think anybody wants to invest in Countrywide or pretty much any institution that is really under the gun from the subprime mortgage crisis. They are losing investors, as we found out with the run on the bank out in California.
And then the investors who invest and lose everything, but again, the people are left holding the bag. Let me suggest to you, Mike, something's wrong with the corporate form in general. Corporations in general, what is a corporation? A corporation is a group of people who bond together and they get something called limited liability. Now, there's no necessary reason why this has to happen. There are other business forms. You can form a partnership. You can come in and own shares. But the government gives them limited liability. What that means is they can screw up everything and they don't have to pay out of their pockets. So you get these CEOs and they come in and they're playing with other people's money, and a lot of them simply rape the corporations and the shareholder can do nothing about it. Now, would allow us to control this crazy capitalism.
Raping a corporation implies some sort of nefarious, perhaps criminal activity. There are laws against that. You can't do things like that and not go to jail. You
know,
That's why Kenny Boy over at Enron, you know, was on his way to jail before he passed away. You can't do those kinds of things.
You have
to run an honest corporation.
You really don't. I'll tell you, I just was reading, and this is because the corporation I used to work for, and I'll say it right here on the air, Radio One, the CEO, Alfred Liggett, the company is diving in the dust. It's losing money right and left. And at this time, he just gave himself a huge salary and a huge bonus at a time when he's literally destroying the corporation. So he makes millions at the time that those few shareholders who are left end up losing everything. There should be laws that protect shareholders.
But that's not criminal activity, Mark.
I agree it's not criminal
activity.
It should be.
You know, when you talk about criminal
activity,
I forget the guy's names, the father and the son who ran the Adelphia cable company and stuff like that. They're both cooling their heels in jail these days because of what they did to that company. They committed criminal acts. And when you commit a criminal act, you go to jail.
But my problem is not that it's criminal. I'm not saying it is criminal. My problem is that it's legal. It is legal for corporations to amass all these money from people just trying to invest their money. And what do they do with it? They pay off Republican office holders. You know, they give money to George Bush, like Kenny Boy Lay did. And then the shareholders are left holding the bag. Shareholders really should be in control. And if you believe in merit pay for teachers, as I know you do, actually as I do too, why can't we have merit pay? Why can't we say that a CEO who loses money for their corporation isn't paid that year? That's how it works if you own your own small business. If you own your own small business, you got a store,
and you lose money,
right? You lose money.
No. If you own a small business, just like a large business, you own a small business and you have a bad year and there's no money left in the till to pay yourself and stuff like that, you go to your local bank and you borrow some more
and then
you pay yourself.
That's different. You're borrowing money.
They're going to the shareholders. That's what a company does. When somebody invests by buying money, shares in the company is borrowing that money and using it to invest in the company. Now, whether they're investing in exploration and expansion, or whether they're investing in production, or whether they're investing in debt reduction because they had a lousy year, or whether they're investing in lining the pockets of the corporate officers, they're still borrowing the money from the shareholders. And the shareholders
can take their money
and go home anytime they want.
Here's the difference. If a small business holder is borrowing to pay himself a salary, most banks, good banks, not the banks that did these subprime loans, would say, no, wait a minute, you're borrowing money just to pay yourself a salary? No deal, no loan. Shareholders have already invested on all they do. I mean, what are their choices? They can sell their stock at a loss after the guy's already
raped
the corporation.
Okay, so that's what the free market's all about. You know, if you invest in something and you lose, you know, I don't want the government saying, oh, well, we're going to have to make that up for you. No, if you invest in something at 80 and it turns out it's 40 and you want out, you just took a bath.
Okay, but wouldn't shareholders do a lot better? I get CEOs, they may do worse off, but shareholders would do better if we had a law. And the law says this: if the market goes up, the CEO gets paid, gets a portion, so forth. But if he loses or she loses value to the corporation, and the corporation loses money, then guess what? The CEO gets a minimum salary. Let's say, $50,000, whatever the workers make.
You can set merit pay for CEOs, but first of all, the merit pay has to be set by the board of directors. It can't be set by the government.
But the board of directors are his friends.
And secondly, you need to set merit pay for anybody. I've worked in the private sector. You need to set merit pay such that there are things that people can control. And if you say, if the company grows and makes money, the CEO makes money, and if the company doesn't grow and doesn't make money, the CEO doesn't make any money, well, in today's current economic climate, it's very difficult for any company to grow and really have a great year. In fact, you're going to see some companies are going to have great years, but most companies, because of the economic climate, are not going to have great years, and you're telling those CEOs through no fault of their own that they're not going to get paid that year. It doesn't work.
I'm crying a tear for those CEOs. Maybe they're just a nation of whiners, because it seems to me if the CEO makes $100 million 1 year and makes $100 million another year, and then the next year he doesn't make $100 million, he only makes a minimum of $50,000 because guess what? The company lost two-thirds of its value. I know, I cry for them. I really feel their pain, but I think they'll be okay.
No.
I really think they'll be okay.
I don't feel their pain at all. In fact, I think most CEOs tend to be grossly overpaid.
I agree.
But I want the market to correct the distortion.
The market, you know, you have this faith, Republicans often do, that the free market is always perfect.
Mark, you can't have the government dictate what people make. I mean, you know, let's...
Well, you believe in merit pay for teachers. That's the government dictating what people make because they're working for the government.
But they're public employees.
Right.
Their employer is dictating what they make.
And that's what corporations often do. Let me give you a couple examples, all right? Bear Stearns, private corporation,
right.
All right? They make a bunch of terrible decisions.
Right.
And instead of letting it fall apart and run to the ground, they run to George Bush, they run to the Republicans, they run to the Democrats. They say, hey, we made lousy decisions. We want to pay off our chief executives, but we need you to help us for our mistakes. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac used to be government corporations.
Mm-hmm.
They control a lot of mortgages. Now we made them private because of the free market.
Between them, they control about 50% of the mortgage paper.
They're very important. Now, as a government agency, they worked pretty well. They never had any problems, as far as I know, from 1938 to 1968. Then they became private. They made some bad mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And now what's going to happen? They're going to run to the government for a bailout. What these corporations are saying is if we win, if times are good, our CEOs get tons of money. If times are bad, our CEOs still get tons of money, and the taxpayers bear the burden.
All right,
and that's crony capitalism.
Let me say this. First of all, I'm very mixed on whether or not Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae ought to be saved. I think ultimately you have to come down on the side that they do have to be bailed out because you can't let happen to the economy what will happen if 50% of the market just vanishes. You will have a severe recession bordering on depression if that happens, and I think the government has a compelling interest not to do that. So against my better philosophy, I think that we should bail them out. However, the terms and conditions of the bailout are that, number one, the last people to get made whole on this whole thing is the stockholders, and number two, there's more or less a clean sweep, including the CEOs, on the corporations. And that ought to be the strings attached to the federal money that's going to keep these organizations and the economy afloat. And if it turns out that that money is made available and there's not more or less a clean sweep of these things, then I say I can't support it because you can't let these corporations fail. They're absolutely too big in terms of their dominance of the mortgage market. They have to be around. You can't just let that whole cesspool fall down. But man, I will be kicking. I'll be whining if they don't clean house on the management.
I'm glad to hear that because I was going to propose to you that if there is a bailout, there be a clean sweep and not just firing. Not just firing CEOs. That's not enough. That's not enough. I want a pound of flesh. All right.
You want them to give back some of their bonus?
Exactly. I want them to give back all of their bonus. I want them to give back every penny that they made while they were there making those bad decisions. Give them some minimum. I don't know. What do their workers make? Maybe even a little bit more than that, but they ruined those corporations. They made terrible decisions. They should be punished for it. See, I believe in a free market, a true free market. A free market to me is you do well, you get paid. You do very well. You do badly, you lose. You lose your money. And it seems to me the whole corporate form, what it does is it says that if you do well, you're rewarded, and if you do badly, you're rewarded. And that's my problem. I admit it. With the whole corporate form, we need more regulation. And I'm not the only person to say this. Bernanke, Fed chairman, no Democrat he, also said we need more regulation to stop this crony capitalism.
All right. You know, I don't know. Well, certainly we'll have a lot of investigation of these corporations to see if there's any malfeasance going on. And if there is some malfeasance going on.
What if it's just negligence?
Not only should there be recovery of the money that was paid out for a malfeasant act, et cetera, but they ought to be criminally prosecuted.
What if it's just bad business decision? I'm not arguing criminal behavior. They made stupid business decisions.
If it's just a bad business decision, they are being hurt. Remember, a vast, vast, huge chunk of CEO pay is in the form of stock options, where if your stock is flying high at $80, you have the option when you were hired that you can buy this stock at $8. And so you invest $8, and immediately that $8 is worth $80. And that's just the way the whole thing works.
I say this. We have to take a break. I'll give you a chance.
Those $80 stock options are now back down to what they paid for
or
lower.
I'll give you a chance to come back. But I follow these corporations, and I know what they do. The price goes down. They offer more stock options at a lower price. It's a no-lose situation. Folks, if you want to join this discussion on either side, 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
Around the world, one out of every three women will be beaten or otherwise abused in their lifetime, often by a family member or loved one. A future free from violence. It's all she's ever wished for.
Stop children from joining gangs. You can help a father find a job and home for his family. You can assist a woman who can't afford the medicine she needs to live and the home she can't live without. You can choose to make a difference in our community. Support Volunteers of America. And you can help improve the lives of nearly 2 million Americans each year with programs and services that help individuals and families overcome their challenges to become as independent as possible. Support the programs that are working in our community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089.
For some folks, saving for the future is easy. But for you, it might take a little more effort. Saving for your future is your responsibility. And there's a lot to save for.
I never thought of that.
Like your child's education. Perhaps uncovered medical expenses. or just to be sure you can live the way you want when you retire. The time is now to save for tomorrow. Save now or work forever. The choice is yours. Choose to save.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. My guest, Republican strategist Mike Lane, and I are discussing the economy and the role of corporations and what McCain and Obama will do about it. I'm your host, Mark Levine. If you want to join the debate, it's easy to do. Just pick up the phone, dial 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can agree with Mike. You can agree with me. You can tell both of us we're full of it. That's what a live television show is all about. Let's hear from you. Mike, just to finish on corporations, it seems
to finish
me,
off corporations is the case,
you know,
maybe?
Look, I don't mind the existence of corporations. I understand they are public. They are created by law. They don't have to exist. We allow them to exist by grace of, you know, we decide that these people don't have to pay when they screw everything up. That's called limited liability. A partnership has to pay. You're in a partnership and you owe a bunch of money, you got to pay it back.
You have personal exposure instead of the corporate umbrella.
You're a sole practitioner. Right. You expend a lot in your small business.
If you're not incorporated, then you pay
it
back.
You got to pay it back. So this is a benefit. This is a benefit. We, the government, say, all right, we're going to allow you, huge corporation, to be scofflaws and not pay your debts, at the same time as we're going to increase bankruptcy laws so that poor people who are struggling to make a living, you have to pay every penny back of your credit card debts. This is a huge advantage that we, the government, allow extremely rich people to have. They should be thankful for it. And in exchange for this benefit, they should be regulated. And I'd like to suggest to you that one of those regulations should be to strengthen shareholder rights. To say to shareholders, if you don't like the way a corporation is running, you can vote out the guy. Now, today, they have a technical right to do it, but no actual right. I want to ask you, can you think of a single time? I can name for you 10 failed corporations in a second. Can you name a single one of them where the shareholders actually came around and voted out the board of directors and got whole new waves of management? It's hard to think of any of them. Maybe you can count on one or two.
I can't. It might have happened. I'm not just knowledgeable about that particular kind of thing.
But let's just say it happens less than 1% of the time. I mean, I think it's extremely rare.
Well, I mean, you know, we're talking the high-profile things here that we're talking about. It might, you know, it might be. First of all, let's talk about who stockholders are. Stockholders are you and me and our crew here on the set and things like that.
And pension
plans.
But
stockholders are mostly institutions.
Right.
You know, it's pension plans.
Right, which is still our money.
Exactly. It's still our money.
Right.
And all the shares that pension plans and other institutional investors like that, those are all voted as a block by those particular
shouldn't
things.
Shouldn't be,
should it? So, well, no, it should
shouldn't
be.
Shouldn't workers control whether pension plans vote?
It should be, because if you're managing a pension plan and you take a stake, let's say you've got 5% of a corporation or something like that, rather than dilute those shares and have them voted by each individual employee that's a member of the pension plan and stuff like that, if the pension fund manager can vote them as a block, it's a lot more power on behalf of the shareholders.
But here's the
problem.
That's
actually democratic rights for shareholders.
No, but it's not, because the pension fund manager is not appointed by the people who are going to get the pensions. Pensions are for workers, and the workers don't control who the pension fund manager is. The corporation controls who the pension fund manager is. So you have the corporation choosing someone playing with the workers' money.
But the market dictates that the pension fund manager is always trying to maximize return on investment for that pension fund, because that's what he gets paid on.
Nah, not if necessarily. He's got friends who are board of directors. He's got friends who are CEOs.
If you follow your logic here, then everybody is just sitting around not caring if we make any money, and the economy just goes into a downward spiral, and we just turn out the lights. You know,
I think we are. America is in decline. I think Phil Graham is wrong about that. But you understand that individuals can make money as corporations go into decline. That's exactly my point. People do make money raping corporations, even when it's legal. People do make money mismanaging corporations, even when it's legal. That's my point. If the shareholders lose money, if the workers lose money, I want the CEOs to lose money,
too. And I don't think America's in decline. I think still America's best days are ahead of us. I see a bright, optimistic future for our country, for our people, for our children. And I absolutely reject the concept that America is in decline. We're not.
We are
a world leader in technology, in innovation, in production, in wealth. You know, there is just in creation of the middle class, The only thing we're lagging behind on seriously is education, and it's because we have no standards of accountability.
How about a massive debt? How about the largest debt in American history? How about competitiveness? How about the fact that
we're
increasingly owned by Saudi Arabia and China? Now, I have no doubt that if Barack Obama is elected, America can grow again. America can be competitive again. The best days can be before us. But if John McCain includes and continues all these terrible Bush economic policies that are running us into the ground, we'll continue into the
ground. Mark, you know what? These terrible Bush economic policies just resulted over the weekend in announcements that Boeing took in orders for about 135 jets and with options for another 135.
Yeah, war is awfully profitable for Boeing.
No, I'll grant that. These are not military jets. These are passenger jets. These are 757s, 767s. Took in 135 orders over the weekend and an option for another 135, I believe. You know,
I'll tell you it's doing really well. You know, ExxonMobil, record profits, higher profits than any corporation in American history. Plus, they get tax cuts, those tax cuts that George Bush and John McCain support. So they not only make the biggest profits that any corporation has ever made, they also get tax benefits. Isn't that nice?
Okay, you know what? They only get the domestic tax benefits for research and development and production of domestic oil. And if you want to take domestic oil out of the equation by taxing that even higher with, let's say, let's get rid of the depletion allowance.
I thought you believed in the free
market,
Mike.
Let's get rid of the depletion allowance and let's slap a windfall profits tax on it anyway. And you know, let's cap our domestic oil wells now, and then we can go to instead of 65% of our oil from OPEC and overseas, we can go to 85% or 90% of our oil from OPEC and overseas, and that'll provide some energy safety and security for our country, won't it?
Or we could get off oil. We could use electric cars. We could use solar
energy. I'm all
energy.
For that. I'm
we
all for that.
We could use wind energy.
I'm all for
we
that.
We need government to push.
No, we don't.
You said it yourself. Detroit made all the wrong choices. You
right.
know why they made the wrong choices? Because the government wasn't directing their hand.
I can't believe you say these
things. I'm sorry, I do.
No.
Because in Europe, they're making the right choices. In Japan, they're making the right choices because they're the government.
Why is our economy stronger than theirs? Why is
it isn't.
Our economy is much stronger than Europe's.
It depends where in Europe, but you know, Germany's doing pretty well. England is doing pretty well.
England isn't doing that well at all, and France is, you know, basically doing a downward spiral.
The euro is what a dollar is a dollar 50 now.
Okay. So the euro is strong and the dollar is weak. You know, in no small measure, that increases by a substantial margin the ability of foreign countries or foreign markets to buy our manufactured goods and for us to increase our exports. We've been complaining for 20, 30 years about our deficit in the trade, our trade deficit, where we're always importing more than we're exporting. You know, right now, with the amount of export we're doing with the weak dollar, it's catching up, and we're going to have higher exports than imports. We've solved that problem. The market did it.
Mike, you know what Europe has that we don't have? They have fuel-efficient cars. They have people taking more public transportation, far more than we do. They have even higher gas prices.
And you know what? God bless them. God bless them.
If you fly into a European city, any European city, you can take a train from that European airport right into the heart of Europe. You would think we could do that in America, but we can't even do that in New York City.
And isn't it a complete and total shame that you can't go into a European airport and rent a car for a reasonable price and fill it up for a reasonable price and drive it downtown to your hotel? Isn't that a shame?
No,
yes,
it's not.
Yes, it is.
Because you'd be stuck in traffic anyway, just as we are
here
in Washington, D.C., as they are in New York.
If they would stop over investing in transit and build roads, you wouldn't be stuck in traffic.
Mike, it's far more convenient to just hop on the train, and it takes you right there into the center
Mark,
city.
Nobody believes
you hop on the subway, and then you get to your hotel.
Look, transit's convenient in one thing.
I'll tell you this. In Washington, D.C., National Airport, that's a wonderful metro stop. I use it. Now, you can't do it for Dulles or BWI because
Mark,
the Republicans don't want to fund those kinds of things.
I know where you live. You can drive to that airport in 4 minutes.
I'd have to park.
And by the time you walk to the metro and get on the metro
I'd have to park.
Things like that. Mark, you're talking about investing 45 minutes in this thing when you can drive there in 4 minutes.
It's cheaper.
Why would you do that?
It's cheaper. I take a bus. I take the metro. Boom, I'm there. I don't have to worry about my car. I don't have to worry about parking. In Europe, they understand public transportation. Americans are just learning to. And it's something we could have done 20 years ago. It wouldn't have to give all of our wealth to the very people who end up attacking us, Islamic terrorists who get our money from Saudi Arabian dictators.
Transit works well under one circumstance. Transit works well when you've got a whole bunch of people going from one area to another area all at the same time. Definition of that is commutation. Commuting, yes, transit is a perfect solution.
For big cities. I didn't
always
say that Montana should have it.
When we had big cities, but now that we've diversified our job centers and we're no longer having the job centers in the big cities and we have job centers all around and every suburb has to be an economic engine and every, you know, this, that, and the other thing, now even transit for commutation doesn't work that well.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Europe.
We need...
Because the Paris metro goes everywhere. It doesn't just go in and out. It acts spokes and all. It goes everywhere. Good cities know how to do good public transportation.
This is what we need. We need a balance. We need a multimodal approach to transportation that is balanced and does not advantage or disadvantage any given thing. And you are advocating a system that is hostile to the automobile, and I don't think America wants you, to be hostile to the automobile. They want their government to treat their automobile fairly.
I like to drive as much as anyone.
A balanced, multimodal approach.
I'm not hostile to the car, but in my view, we should pay the full cost.
But Democrats are hostile to the car.
Mike.
Democrats are hostile to the car.
Let's talk about the full cost of a car. Because when you pay for gasoline, all right, you're not just paying the dictators of Saudi Arabia, Iran, Venezuela, and Russia.
Right, you're also paying the government. You're paying the government.
A little bit of tax money. You're also paying...
A little bit. That's the biggest chunk.
You're also paying trillions of dollars to put our troops in Iraq, who are there solely to protect oil supplies. We wouldn't give a damn about Iraq or Saddam Hussein if it weren't for oil, just like we don't give a damn about African dictators. We care about it because they have oil. That's why we're there. And if you add those trillions of dollars to our gasoline prices, then we should be paying $6, $7 a gallon.
Well, I disagree. First of all, we are there for safety, security, freedom, democracy.
Really?
Why
aren't we in Sudan?
Trade.
That would give us safety, security, and freedom and democracy to some people who really need it.
You know what, Mark? You want to go to Sudan? I'll vote for that tomorrow.
Okay.
I'll vote for it tonight. In
fine.
Fact, I'll vote for it now.
What about Burma?
We ought to be there.
Myanmar. What about Liberia?
Absolutely. We ought to be there.
I mean, there's places
no,
all
Liberia,
over the
Liberia is not that bad. We can, you know, let's pick and choose our things. Burma, yeah. We're there tomorrow. I'm voting for that. Sudan, I'm voting for that. Let's go.
Heck, Egypt, our ally in Egypt.
We'll put our uniforms on, we'll go.
Okay. Well, we don't have enough troops right now because they're all in Iraq. But that's the point.
We'll shake a few loose out of the garrison.
Can you deny, or do you really deny, I want to hear you say this on camera.
All right.
That I say the reason we're in Iraq and we're not in Burma and we're not in Sudan, I can say it in three letters, O-I-L, oil. Now, are you going to sit here with a straight face, look me in the eye, and tell me that the reason we're in Iraq and we're not in Burma and Sudan has nothing to do with oil? You can't say that,
no.
Can you?
Certainly maintaining the world economy is part of the reason why Saddam Hussein had to go. I mean, the man was a threat to stability of the region and everything that goes along with
because
that.
Because of our addiction to oil.
I have no problem with getting off the addiction to oil. I have a problem with doing it cold turkey. You cannot stop oil tomorrow and start solar and wind tomorrow. Mark, it's a 50-year transition.
Cold turkey. First of all, I think
it's a 50-year transition.
Brazil did it in 8 years.
You know
I say it's a 20-year transition.
No, it's a 50-year transition. It really is.
But we haven't started. Jimmy Carter had us starting in the 1970s, and Ronald Reagan put a stop to it.
Jimmy Carter had us sitting in our living rooms with sweaters on, freezing to death in the winter and sweating in the summer. That's what Jimmy Carter had.
Do you support government subsidies to have fuel-efficient cars? CAFE standards requiring high fuel-efficient cars, money to build the electric engine, money for wind and solar plants. Do you support helping us get off our addiction to oil?
If you're talking about a lower tax associated with a more fuel-efficient car, yeah, I'll go with that. Absolutely.
Okay.
I have no problem with that.
Hey, we have agreement.
I'm for lower taxes under 99% of circumstances.
But I would raise them on the oil companies because I want to discourage oil at the same time as
it's the people. It's not the government's money. It's the people's money. And if you want to accomplish a goal by creating an incentive and letting the people keep some of their own money at the same time, you know, I think we found agreement there.
Well, you know, part of the problem is that you, like most Republicans, never found a tax cut you don't like. And the problem is if we cut all taxes for everyone, including Exxon, we don't have enough money to run the government. When we come back, I want to talk about Obama and McCain and which one will run up a bigger deficit. I have no doubt it would be John McCain, but I want to hear your argument when we come back. If you want to call in, folks, 888-488-MARK. Back after this.
She's had more than a dozen fractures. And in the next few years, she faces two major surgeries to strengthen her fragile bones. She's only 10 years old. Most people don't worry about fragile bones until late in life. For those with osteogenesis imperfecta, brittle bones are a concern throughout their lifetime. Find out how you can strengthen this child's future.
Diabetes is a killer. After I was diagnosed, I didn't feel sick, so I didn't listen to my doctor. Then it struck. I had a heart attack, then a stroke, and I was only 49.
Most people with diabetes also have high blood pressure and cholesterol, which can cause severe heart damage. In fact, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke.
Don't let diabetes destroy your life.
Call for your free diabetes survival guide. Choose to live.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I want to give you your last chance to call in. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. Wherever you're listening, if you're listening on Channel 10 or on the Internet at RadioInsideScoop.com, you can yourself join in the debate. Don't be afraid to interrupt Mike and me. We can take it. We want to hear from you. 888-488-6275. Mike, before the break, I was talking about the difference between Obama and McCain. In the issue of fiscal responsibility. Now, there may have been a time 40, 50, 60 years ago, I don't know when the Republicans were actually fiscal conservatives. Must have been before I was born.
It's about 8 or 9 years ago.
I'm not sure when it was. It was an awfully long time ago. But clearly now they're not. Clearly they believe in massive, massive debt. And John McCain, I would argue, is going right into that tradition. Obama is talking about tax cuts for the 95% of Americans that earn under $150,000, but he admits that he's going to have tax increases for the 2% that earn over $250,000. Obama has a plan of some tax increases, some tax cuts. Now, nobody likes tax increases, but what it would do is it would reduce the deficit. John McCain, it's almost like he's got a card out there, and he's saying, candy for everyone. You don't pay taxes, and you, Oprah in the car, you don't pay taxes, and you don't pay taxes. Nobody ever pays taxes again. And, of course, what does that do? That gives us massive, massive debt, more American ownership by Saudi Arabia and China and India, and eventually our kids have to pay twice as much taxes, trying to pay back for the Bush-McCain fiscal irresponsibility. If you were a Perot voter in 1992 and you cared about the budget deficit, you're voting for Obama this fall.
Aha. I don't think so. No. In fact, only John McCain has pledged that he will balance the budget within 4 years.
That's the last.
On his fifth budget.
Will he wave a wand?
No. You know what?
How's he going to do that, Mike?
Well, I'll tell you. You know, John McCain is pretty upfront about the fact that he can be difficult to get along with. He can be prickly. He can be obstructionist. He can be a lot of things. And he has, in fact, his soundbite is, you know, one of the awards I'll never win in the Senate is Miss Congeniality. And
well, we have a $400 billion deficit. Tell me how he's going to pay for it.
There's a lot of his colleagues who personally have sort of a burr under their saddle about the way John McCain treats them. And the reason is John McCain will end pork overnight. That's the start right
it's
there.
It's not enough.
He'll end, well, no. But that's a pretty good down payment, and Obama, you know, all right, look.
Look, Mike, we have a $470 billion dollar deficit.
Let's stick this to where we're going.
McCain wants 100 years in Iraq, and he wants to include the Bush tax cuts, make them permanent. He wants all kinds of other tax cuts. That increases the deficit to, I don't know, $600 billion Where are we getting the money? Okay. Go ahead. Social Security? What are we doing?
Let's stipulate as to where we're going on this whole thing, okay? Obama says, I'm going to balance the budget by raising taxes. He is not going to cut a single program, hasn't proposed a single cut in the entire campaign.
Sure, yes.
And, in fact, has proposed over $871 billion in new spending that he's promised for the first
year. Cuts are easy.
$871 billion in new spending.
I'll tell you what Obama will cut.
McCain says, no new programs. Let's cut the budget. We don't need new taxes. Let's do it that way.
Let me tell you what Obama will cut.
As a general philosophy, I'd rather cut the spending rather than increase the taxes.
When the troops come home from Iraq, we're going to save a lot of money.
Okay.
That's a lot of money. You know how expensive the Iraq war is?
No.
It's costing us trillions of dollars. 16 months, that's Obama's plan to bring the troops home, or the great majority of them home, and suddenly our debt in Iraq from $200 billion a year to $20 billion a year.
That's another thing. He was gonna,
and the tax cuts to Exxon.
He was going to bring all the troops home in 16 months.
Combat
and
troops.
Now he's talking about leaving combat troops over there that are needed to help the Iraqis.
What he's saying is
Maybe 16 months isn't the right thing because the commanders on the ground are going to help him out, you know. And
Mike, what Obama has said...
What he said is that he's flip-flopped on the war.
George Bush is not allowing Barack Obama to have the classified briefings that he should have. He is a presidential candidate. He is a nominee of a major party.
Mark.
They should allow him to meet with our military now.
Mark.
They're not. I disagree with that decision.
But
once he meets with them, he's obviously going to take account of facts on the ground.
That
doesn't change his goals.
For almost 1,000 days, the Republican Party has been bugging him about go to Iraq, talk
he's
to
He's going.
The,
he's call, gone yeah. in, what, 30 days?
But
20
go,
days?
Go to Iraq and talk to the field commanders on the ground and find out what's going on and find out what they needed. And you're right. Finally, he's going after 1,000 days. He'll get every briefing he needs while he's
over there. You know
what?
I bet you he'll have minders.
It'll be just
like the Soviet Union when you visit there. You'll have Bush minders. Well, don't tell him the truth. You'll be fired if you tell him the truth, just like all those other generals they fire
the truth. John McCain said he'd go with him. There won't be any minders if he accepts John McCain's offer and goes with John McCain.
There'll still be minders.
But you know what?
George Bush will still have minders
He rejected John McCain's offer on that, the way he rejected John McCain's offer to do town hall meetings, the way he rejected John McCain's offer to accept public financing.
Mike, I know you don't want to talk about fiscal responsibility. It's very easy to change the subject. I don't blame you. Because Obama is talking about bringing more money in and taking more money out.
No.
Ending the Iraq war.
He's talking about tax increases versus McCain spending reductions.
Okay.
That's where we're at.
I understand John McCain is going to give thousands of dollars to everybody. Well, really, just the super rich.
No,
you're right.
He's not going to give money to anybody. No.
You're right. Poor people.
Everyone's going to get cut.
You know what? If you under Obama, if you make under $150,000, you do better under Obama than McCain because under $150,000 gets a tax cut.
No.
Under Obama, under McCain, the only people that get tax cuts are those that are the super rich
that are
under the Bush plan.
Help me out here.
But I want to know how he's going to pay for it. That's my question.
I know Obama says that anybody under $150,000 gets a tax cut.
Right.
Although most people who look at it says that his math is, shall we say, fuzzy. Now, here's the dichotomy. How does Obama justify, not once, but twice in the last week, last 2 weeks, voting for the Democratic budget resolution which calls for a tax increase on any American making in excess of $31,000?
What are you talking about? You're talking about capital gains tax?
No, I'm talking about a net tax increase for anyone making more than $31,000 in the Democratic budget resolution.
Income tax? Alternative minimum tax? What tax are you talking about?
I'm talking about their net liability.
Their net liability.
When you take away the Bush child tax credit that the Democrats want to take away, when you take away the end of the marriage penalty, which Bush got taken care of, and the Democrats want to reimpose the marriage penalty,
and Obama gives them tax cuts to take care of all of that.
Why does Obama vote for a budget resolution that calls for a tax increase on anyone making more than $31,000 a year?
Because when the Bush tax cuts expire, not only does that bring in a lot of money into our treasury, you still haven't told me how McCain is going to pay for his balanced budget, and I know you can't. So it's going to be hard for you.
If you quit interrupting me, I'd tell you.
I'm going to give you a chance to. But, Obama has tax cuts for those under $150,000, and that takes care of the tiny, child credit and marriage penalty things that are much less than the amount that Obama's talking about. But here's what I want to know. How is McCain going to pay for this huge giveaway? $400 billion deficit now. We increased to $600 billion deficit, according to the CBO under McCain's plan. How are we going to pay for this?
Okay, the first thing you do is you don't raise taxes the way Obama wants to. If you don't raise taxes, then you have much more robust economic growth, and the Treasury actually gets more money in than before.
Mark, the Laffer curve? Are we really going there?
No, we're talking...
It didn't work under Reagan. It didn't work under Bush. When you cut taxes, guess what? Deficits go up, not down.
When you cut taxes, the economy becomes more robust, and net revenues to
the
Treasury...
When does that ever happen?
Net revenues to the Treasury, actually, every single time you cut taxes, that's what happened.
Really? It happened. Bush cut taxes, and we had this massive deficit.
It happened.
Reagan cut taxes, we have a massive deficit.
Right, and you know why? Because spending was not under control.
Spending won't be under control because John McCain won't tell you how to cut it.
Revenues to the Treasury spurt. So what you do is...
No,
you
they
know,
don't.
As when
That's never happened. It didn't happen in 82. It didn't happen in 2001.
You can look at every tax thing from John Kennedy now. When John Kennedy cut taxes... Boom, more money came into the Treasury.
When John Kennedy cut taxes,
more money
the highest
came into the
marginal
Treasury.
Tax rate was 70%, and he cut it down to 50%. All right?
And more money came into the Treasury.
Today, the highest tax rate is 36%.
Right.
So at those rates, under Reagan, under Bush, guess what? When they cut taxes, the deficits increased. No one in the Democratic Party is arguing for marginal tax rates in excess of 50%.
Mark.
At those very high rates, that can happen. But it can't happen at the rates we are now.
If Obama and the Democrats really think that, you know, that taking 50% of someone's money, and that's
they
just
don't.
The, and
that's my
just
point.
The federal tax.
That's my point. They
that's
don't.
Just the federal tax. Oh,
Mike.
What does, of course, Obama wants.
$600 billion. I want you to know, we got 2 minutes left. I'm going to give you the full floor. I want you to tell me how John McCain is going to pay for the $480 billion deficit we have now, plus the increased tax cuts he's going to give that I calculate as being about $600 billion deficit. How is he going to balance the budget in 2013?
Okay.
Go.
Probably 30 of those seconds rather than taking the whole thing, so you have a chance to rebut. What you do is you don't kill the economy the way Obama wants to. You let the economy grow. You get more robust economic growth. You get more taxes coming into the Treasury. You have a bigger pie. You expand the pie. The second thing you do is you cut out waste, fraud, and abuse, which is, you know, pork and other things. The third thing you do is after the waste, fraud, and abuse, then you limit discretionary spending.
Cut Social Security? No,
we're talking about discretionary spending, Mark, okay?
I'm waiting to hear you cut Social Security because I know that's what Republicans really want to do.
You hold on to discretionary spending and you don't let it expand the way it's been going now. In fact, you might even freeze discretionary spending. And then the fourth thing you do is you have comprehensive bipartisan entitlement reform. And you get control of the exploding out of control.
You cut Social Security. And you cut Medicare.
You get control of the exploding out of control entitlement programs that are bleeding the budget dry.
So you're going to take it. So you're going to take it out of Social Security and Medicare. That's what I thought you were going to say.
You're
going to make sure all these people paid in the system for all these years. You're going to make sure they don't get any money back.
I absolutely did not say that, and you're not going to put those words in my mouth.
You said entitlement spending. That's Social Security and Medicare.
Bipartisan entitlement
reform. Bipartisan. Oh, you're going to say Democrats.
Bipartisan entitlement reform.
And you know what the Democrats will say?
Let me ask you
We'd
this.
We'd rather be beheaded than cut Social Security.
Who's the one,
are never going to cut Social Security.
Who is the one
only
member
of party is going to cut Social Security.
Who is the one member of 535 members of Congress with a consistent, effective track record of reaching across the aisle and working with the other party? It is John McCain, who is truly the best bipartisan legislature in the Congress and has been for 30 years.
We only have a few seconds
Obama
left.
Is so partisan, he'll never be able to work with Republicans.
Expanding the pie? All right, that's exactly what Bush argued in 2001. Well, Reagan argued in 82. It failed. We had massive deficit. Waste, fraud, and abuse? Every presidential candidate says he's going to get rid of it.
Not Obama.
Never.
Obama loves waste, fraud, and abuse.
Never happens. Discretionary spending? Not enough. The real answer is he's going to cut your Social Security. He's going to cut your Medicare. You heard it from Mike. Bipartisan? No way. The Democrats will never agree to it. The only one who will cut your Social Security is John McCain. But I always enjoy debating with you, Mike.
Dead wrong, Mark. Dead wrong.